TagCastPodcast.com.
Hey guys, today's episode is brought to you as always by our gracious sponsors at Pizza Now and Complete Ag Resolutions. Complete Ag Resolutions offer you the best solutions in all your agricultural needs. They're a family-based business where the customer always comes first. Check them out at facebook.com/completeagresolutions. And Pizza Now, they're ready when you are. They're at 1705 Southeast Hill Street. And I personally would suggest that you get the porcupine pizza. It's a barbecue base with a pulled pork and pineapple and red onions if you like that stuff. Check them out. They have a Facebook at Pizza Now Albany. You can call them up at 928-0900. You can check out their Twitter at Pizza Now One. So check out Pizza Now and Complete Ag Resolutions. And now listen to your episode. Hey, Gatch.
Yeah.
We're on iTunes. We're on TuneIn. We're on Stitcher. We're on the internet. We're on Facebook. We're on TagCastPodcast.com.
You just blew my mind.
Did you say blow?
Mind. I'm losing my mind.
And now, once again, it's time for the TagCast Podcast with Terry and Gatch.
Is it blow?
Yeah.
My name's Terry Gatch.
You know what you are? You give me leg monster!
You're a sexist, egotistical, lying, hypocritical bigot.
Hello, everybody. I can't speak.
My leg was right out in the middle of the street.
Did you know that I've seen your penis 6 times today? And his name is Dustin Gatchel.
Would you go to the president's office? Shit on his desk while he's watching right there on his desk.
We don't need idiots.
Ernest?
Good for nothings. Meth heads. Or
Bob.
I'm getting made for this, boys.
The TagCast Podcast starts right now.
Is the final countdown to the final episode of the final season 3 show of the TagCast Podcast.
Finally, jeez.
I know, it took forever.
God.
Here we are. I am the Indian of the podcast.
Whoa, he's back!
Gatch!
The Indian of the podcast. He's been gone so long.
I know.
I almost forgot.
All season.
Almost forgot that he was an Indian. Except for that tear that was rolling down his cheek.
Only when you throw stuff on the ground.
Or when I told you that it was Kurt Cobain's birthday last Wednesday.
Oh, man.
One
and
single
it's been
tear.
Like 19 years since he...
offed himself.
Well, that's coming up. His death day.
Yeah, since he littered. You're like, he was a litterer. He littered the floor with his brains.
Speaking of... Oh, you haven't even introduced yourself.
Oh, they all know who I am.
Oh.
I'm so popular. I get recognized just by my voice.
Right on.
I go into a store and they're like, wait, could you talk again? Are you Terry from the TagCast podcast?
Are you going to adopt the first name?
Like, Terry.
For your comedy, just be like known as Terry.
Terry. Unless I'm doing the clean comedy, then I'm TG13.
That is fucking awesome, dude. I love that.
Yeah.
You should totally stick with that.
I wrote that on my notebook and Dana was like, what is... Oh, TG-13.
I like that, dude. I think you should roll with that, for sure. You know.
I just
TG-13,
like,
people will go, what is that?
I've got a tight 13. Your old girlfriend.
Is that one of your clean jokes?
No, I'm working
on it. Is that how you open it?
Hey, my name is Terry. TG-13. I got a tight 13. Your old daughter that's never had sex, so don't even think about it.
Happy Friday. Speaking of littering... I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast. You got a letter? Did we talk about that on the show?
A letter?
Yeah, from... Well, you received some letters of your lineage.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was awesome. I have now, I traced my, all the way to my...
genealogy, right?
Yeah, I found out who my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was.
Wow, and how did this come about?
My dad was looking for something in the attic, and he lives in the house where my grandparents used to live, who are both passed away. Mm-hmm. And he found a box full of letters, and one was a letter... And one was a letter. Now, my grandpa, when my dad was born in 1944, was getting ready to go into the service, and he was at some like basic training or something. He was getting ready to go to India to World War II. Mm-hmm. And so for some reason, he wasn't there when my dad was born. Well, my grandpa's dad came to see my dad as a baby in the hospital. He was 5 days old, going by the date on the letter. The letter was dated January 27th, 1944. So this letter is like almost 70 years old, and it was the original, and it was typed.
Mm-hmm.
And he just talked about how I saw this fine specimen of a young man, your heir, and he looks like a fine young gentleman. He gave us the one over. It was kind of cool because you're thinking this is 1944. How did people talk back then and stuff like that? And then he said, in this
and
letter.
He probably had like, you know, he's probably playing it up maybe with a little bit of humor. Like.
Yeah, for sure. And then he goes, and James Michael, that's my dad, James Michael might find this letter of interest someday in the future. So hopefully he'll keep it. And he goes, so I'm going to explain to you, as far back as I know it, where the line of Giles came from. And it started with...
Wow. So he wrote this to your dad.
He wrote it to my grandpa.
Oh, wow.
As he went to the hospital to visit my dad when my dad was five days old.
But he was intending for your dad to find this at some point.
Yeah.
And now your dad
found it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so what it said was in 17...
That is awesome.
1746.
And I looked this up. This is like Napoleon was born on one of those years that you're mentioning around the 1700s.
Yeah, and when was like, George Washington was the president in the 1700s, right?
Oh, it was during the time of, the foundation of our country. You know? I mean,
for sure.
You know, people were just starting to move to California and get into that kind of thing. The gold rush hadn't even...
That was the 1850s.
Yeah. And so, I mean, crazy to think about, you know, the things that were going on, like the Napoleon not even being a part of history yet, you know?
Yeah, like Ben Franklin and those guys haven't even been born yet.
Yeah, nobody even knew that you could fly a kite on a string to like get shocked.
No, I mean my great times seven grandpa, J. Conrad Geil, came from Alsace, Germany in 1746 with his son Jacob Geil, who was
30 years before the signing of independence.
Yeah, we weren't even an independent country at the time, and he sailed into Philadelphia. And then it went on to tell how his son married this lady and they moved to Virginia and they had, and this is all just a paraphrase, not correct information, but it basically went like, he had eight children. The fourth of those children was Fred Geil, and he married this lady and they had this many children and they moved to New Market, Virginia, where they had 10 children, and the fourth was, and so it told each of my grandparents all the way down the line, and so all of my ancestors lived in Virginia until my great-grandpa, Henry Ralph Geil, moved out to Oregon in the late 1800s. And then my grandpa was born in 1913.
When did we become, in 1859 was when Oregon was officially a state, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess in 1754, Oregon wasn't even a state, of course.
No. There's only 13 colonies. I mean, yeah, there's the 13 colonies and not many people. I mean, if you look at the topographical map of the U.S., I mean, it's completely flat.
Yep.
over most until you get to like the Colorado area, and then it's just all
the
bumps.
Rockies. Yeah.
It's bumps, and people didn't, you know, I mean.
What's on the other side of those bumps?
Even if they knew that you could see beyond all the flat land to see that, you know? Yeah. I mean, that might have, was that still the time when people were thinking that the world was flat?
No, Columbus.
Oh, 1492.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But apparently that had already been dispelled, and he took credit for something that he didn't do, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, but yeah, it was kind of cool to find out all their names, years they were born, and it was probably a coincidence, but it was almost everyone except for a couple, but it averaged out to where all of my ancestors in the line of Giles that were my male ancestors, their parents all had them when they were like 30. Except for me, my dad was 24, which I guess as time, and then my son was born when I was 23. And so it's kind of cool.
23 is the new 30.
Yeah,
no, wait,
exactly.
I mean,
40 is the new 60.
Yeah. Yeah. So that makes sense. Yeah.
And there was also letters from my grandfather to my grandma that he had wrote in India when he was in World War II.
That's nuts.
And there was a poem. And this was the original paper. I was holding it just by its edges because it was practically falling apart. An original poem from 1908 that my great-great-grandfather wrote a poem to his wife for their 6th anniversary. And it was written with a fountain pen. You know, you could see how it would get lighter and then he'd dip the pen and it'd be heavy ink again. And it was just weird, some of the phrasings that he was using. And it was just talking about how they met under a sycamore tree and they walked through the, and it all rhymed and everything. It was all this nice love poem, but 1908. So
that's nuts, man.
That piece of paper is 105 years old.
If you get some acid-free sheets, which you can get at Costco by the 100 pack.
Free acid?
Sounds like you might need that. I have a sealer.
Free acid?
Mm-hmm.
Acid-free sheets, what's that mean? You could...
Well, it's like those, just the sheets that are in a binder that you can put paper in. They're just created so they don't, you know, if you don't want to just stick it in an acrylic thing because there might be chemicals in there that actually could oxidize the stuff.
Right.
That's the acid-free or the...
Yep.
But yeah, I was tripping on some of those dates because I can't remember exactly the other couple things that I was mentioning, but, you know, it was just like Napoleon being born. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, like...
Like, who was my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa hanging out with in 1756 in Philadelphia? Maybe he was having a beer with Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah. Maybe, what kind of games was he playing as a kid, you know?
Who knows?
Was he kicking the can?
I don't think they had cans back then.
Yeah, they didn't. Maybe did he mention whether or not they had can openers?
No, he didn't say anything about cans, except for how nice his wife's was.
In the poem, right?
Yeah, exactly. It was a lovely little poem. But
I
then
love
at the,
your two cans.
And then after it got to the point in the story where it says, and then John Guile was born in 1913, and it said, and you can finish the story from here, of course, because my dad was the next one, so he would know that he was next. And
that
then
is
said,
an awesome thing, man, that he had the foresight and the...
It was so eloquently written, too.
Yeah.
And he was a pastor. He was a preacher.
So he probably recognized that... Well, not because he was a pastor or whatever, but he probably recognized the amount of knowledge he had about the lineage.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
And it was all typed out perfect, and then at the bottom, it kind of, you know how when you try to type all the way to the bottom, how it kind of runs off? And then he flipped it over and typed a little bit at the end, and it ended up saying, you know, with all of our relatives and being such large families and everybody who moved everywhere from 250 years ago, he said that he is... nearly 100% positive that there are people from our family in every state in the United States. And he said, there's probably people that you talk to every day that are related to you that you don't know that are related to you, you know, just because there were so many. I mean, there's a lot of people everywhere, and I know a lot of people have big families. But to know the 7 or 8 generations of families that all had 8 to 10 children in each family, and then they procreated for the next 8 generations and all had like 8, you know, it's just like, it's like,
don't make me do math.
It's like rabbits, dude.
It ain't birthdays.
No doing math.
No,
so yeah. Yeah, it was a cool story, and thanks for bringing it up because I kind of forgot about it. That was a couple weeks ago, and yeah, thanks to my great-great-grandpappy for having the foresight to write all that stuff down. And in case we forgot, we told you at the beginning, it's the final episode of Season 3, which doesn't mean much except for the next episode you hear will be the first episode of Season 4, and you will get the resolution of the huge cliffhanger that is coming at the end of this episode. I don't want to give it away, but it's more cliffhangy than any episode of 24.
Yeah.
And I've been watching that. And this, by the way, for anyone keeping track, even though we call it episode 341, this is our 116th episode.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty soon, a couple more seasons down the line, we'll be at a 200 mark, and then we'll be even cooler.
I was looking even farther down the road to 420.
Yeah, where will
that'll
we be?
Like, that'll be season 11.
So where do you see yourself at episode 420?
Well, you figure four seasons per year, and we're at three, and that would be 420.
Don't make me do math.
Okay, so we're at season three, you figure 40, right? So we're at 116, so there's 300 episodes till 420. And then there's 40 episodes per, so that's about 8 seasons. That's about 2 years from now.
76!
50!
Yeah. So, yeah, we've had a great season. I had a lot of fun. We had a few guests that actually ended up canceling out, and hopefully we can get them back in there in the form of, like, I think Will Woodruff canceled a couple times, and Westy. All people who have names that start with W. So, obviously, if your name starts...
We're Quirst.
Yeah, Quirst with the W's. We was going to get Woody Harrelson, and he canceled.
He did.
And
Will Wheaton.
Woody Allen.
Woody from Toy Story.
Walter White was going to be on the show.
Yeah,
he
was.
He fucking got all tweaked out.
And
what's his name?
Will what's
Will I Am from Book of Black Eyed Peas.
It's the president, Woodrow Wilson. Oh. He wasn't a president, though, was he?
Slick Willie. Willie Clinton.
Yeah.
Willie Clinton's coming on the show next week, unless Hillary gets a hold of him.
First. Well, we could have Baba Walters.
Oh, she's a Walta.
I thought you were going to say she was a Walrus.
She's a Walrus. I am Baba Walters.
We
had our normal fodder of guests. I think we had two new guests that hadn't been a part of the show in previous seasons. I'm just going to run them down. We had Jerry Murphy, as we always do a few times on the show. Super Dave Wambacher. Al Minta made a few appearances as well.
He's
if you
fine.
Can appear in an audio form.
Mm-hmm.
Jared Nelson, the super fan, he's been on a few times, and Flames from Crimson Guardian, their drummer Sean Quinette, he joined us. Jesse Priest came back. I think he's been a regular as far as hitting every season. I think that's his third appearance on the
Always
show.
A great appearance.
Zach Rowe from 30 Pound Test and Vermin Studios came out. And then we finally got two new people on the show. Our neighbor of the podcast, Lance, set a record with three shows in a row.
I thought it would never happen.
I know. I was beginning to wonder myself. And a lot of you might think, oh, you guys record three shows in a row, so that's not a big deal for him to be on three shows. Yeah, well, it was two different recordings.
No, check this out.
Yeah.
He's told me he's addicted.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he's going to be a part-time regular. He could be like our, what was that guy on the Howard Stern show?
The Fart Man?
No, the guy with a funny name, Gary, God, that guy with the funny nickname.
Well,
his sidekick.
Gary the Retard?
No.
Gary Marshall?
Nope. He had like a nickname that's not like a name. They called him something.
Oh, Beetlejuice?
No. Nope. We'll come back to that.
Are you talking about Howard Stern?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that guy, the other dude, Baba Booey.
Oh, Baba Booey.
Okay, it finally came to me. God, sorry you guys, it took so long.
Baba Booey.
Baba Booey. So, yeah, we had Lance on the show, and then our last guest of the season. Oh, no, not the last guest. We had Dana, my wife. She came on
finally. Yeah, that
was fun. And then we had Jim Lauder on Wednesday, and he was a return guest as well.
Always a good time.
So, yeah, if you like what you hear and you think you'd have fun coming in here with us, which we have fun here. I'm just stuffed with pizza now and pizza balls and weed and cigarettes and Mountain Dew.
And, you know, I mean, we'll throw it out there that, you know, we'd like to have you on a guest, but we're not going to beg you. So, you know, if we throw it out there, or even if we haven't thrown it out there, just say, hey, you looking for a guest sometime? Sure. We like, probably are.
I think after our first episode, I was contacted by Seth Milstein, and he said, I want to be on your show. There, I said it. I said it, and it's out there.
You can, and look where he is now. He's podcasting on a top 100.
Top 200.
Top 200 iTunes podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for stealing our glory there, Seth.
Oh, we started that guy.
You should have. Yeah. I taught him everything.
We kickstarted him.
Yep. And as a matter of fact, like, he inquired about how we record and how we get on the internet.
That's why he wanted to come in on that first episode. He was like, and
he was
we're
casing
like,
it.
And this is what we did. We were like, we know what he's doing, so we're going to make it the worst sounding one yet.
We're going to record with a room mic that we turn our head to cough into. Mm-hmm. And when we talk away from it. before he met his friend Dylan, who's a pretty new friend to him, I think, as far as I think they've known each other 6 or 7 months. But he was inquiring for me to come down maybe and to help him produce an engineer show. And I was like, well, you know, it's opposite direction. And I got this other podcast, and Dustin's kind of the producer, per se, of our show. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing I know, he had met Dylan, and they got their thing off the ground. And
which is awesome.
They, you know, they chased Harmontown down to L.A. for their final show of the tour and got 4 good interviews, which they spread out over 4 episodes. And the next thing you know, they were 108 on iTunes. So yeah.
And they're, cool. You know, they're kind of meta, though. You know, they're a podcast about podcasts.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're...
People who
reach out and have guests that are on podcasts, and it's awesome.
Yes, indeedy. And that's another thing, you know.
Support local podcasts.
I'm glad that Seth is doing well with his podcast, and I was talking on Facebook with Dylan the other night after the comedy show in Portland, and he was saying, yeah, it's really starting to take off, and it's really exciting and really stoked. And he's supposed to be having his own podcast biweekly or once every 2 weeks or something like that, Dylan, and it's focusing on music and singer-songwriters, and he's threatened to have me on his show as well to maybe come on and talk
about
it.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
I know. I'll come on there and bring my acoustic guitar and play a song for you or some shit like that. But, yeah, and another thing, Seth is a great contributor to the local community as far as comedy, putting on shows. Just on Wednesday night, we had the speakeasy show for Andy's going away party, and that was a blast and a half.
May I say something to the comic community around here?
You most certainly may.
Because I've got a little bit of beef. I have many comedian friends on my friends list.
I got some chicken.
You know, right?
Yep.
And sometimes I throw out jokes.
Oh, you've been trying to sell jokes.
And I'll throw out, it's a pretty good discount, I will say. And nobody wants to buy any of them.
Do you target any comedians specifically? Or do you
No.
Well, see, now, you got to understand.
It's just discount bin jokes.
I know, but you got to understand that sometimes you'll miss a post in a time.
Oh, for sure.
In the news feed.
Yeah.
Just because you weren't.
But I figured, you know, I'd hit at least one of them. You know, and I mean, these jokes are like 15 cents, some of them. They're true discount to where, you know, you would get something out there.
For now, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there's a page that's similar to the Portland Comic Board, which is a board on Facebook that's called the Eugene Comedy Scene. You should go to that page on Facebook and like it, and all you comedy lovers should as well. And maybe you could post them on there.
All right.
Because that's kind of like our Eugene Comic Board, but it's more of a like a band page kind of, but it's not a board page, which is a group.
Mm-hmm.
But
I just figure sometimes I'll think of something and I'll throw it out there, and you know, I'm like, well, I'm not going to use it. Maybe I can get a nickel out of it,
or $1.50. Give me $1.50 and we'll call it good.
No, this is fun. I was on a roll the other day, a dinner roll.
I was going to say, was it a biscuit or was it a roll?
It was a biscuit. My biscuit's like 3 years old, 4 years old now.
Hey, how's that biscuit doing?
It's pretty hard.
Is it a stiff biscuit?
It's a stiff. That's awesome. I want to start that band.
So that's a great, great segue. I got a little thing that I want to talk about. Hopefully I can find it. God damn it. I know that I bookmarked that shit. Here it is. So, of course, you'd have to think, if you were compiling a list of the 25 most ridiculous band names ever, that Limp Bizkit would probably be on the list, right?
Yeah, I saw one the other day that was brilliant. It was called the Glitter Dicks, and they were playing with Contagious.
Huh. Wow.
That was a bill I thought, man. That was pretty good.
Yeah, you might have to spell that with an O sometimes and just pronounce it. Contagious. It's like Stan thinks you're a continuous source of joy for his life. Okay, so this is compiled. Okay, we talked about a couple lists before that we'd been given to by Kerry Davis, and I didn't divulge the site, but I'm going to give it up because you gave away a Cracked magazine at the thing, and this is from Cracked.com.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, that's what
I had an old one laying around. It was issue number 350 from December 2000. It had the Nair Witch Project on the back, which I thought was pretty cool.
Is that a hairless witch?
It was Nair. It had the Wicked Witch of the West doing her legs with hairy legs.
All right, so I don't agree with all these, but this is just the order that they put them in, and I got a good kick out of them. Number 25 comes in with Porno for Pyros. Now, do you think that when you first heard that band name, did you ask, what the fuck?
Well, you knew at the time, you know, before I heard the name of the band, I heard the song. And I was like, well, you know who it is when you hear it, right?
Perry Farrell.
And then you hear it's Porno for Pyros or whatever. Or you hear that that's a side project maybe before that you hear the music. And so you're like, Jane's Addiction, you know, I mean, it makes sense because he's kind of freaky.
See, and the cool thing about this little list here is it gives the parent apparently, I don't know how true it can be because I'm reading it off the internet, but...
Well, it's correct.
How they came up with the name of the band.
All right. Oh, this is great. I want to write a book of my own ones.
So, former Jane's Addiction frontman Perry Farrell came up with the name while watching coverage of the L.A. riots, which makes sense because...
I think I've heard that before.
Because it's like pornography for people who like to burn stuff.
Yeah.
It's like Henry Lawrence talk. Every channel you turn, it's the shit is on fire channel. Mm-hmm. You turn to channel 6, shit's on fire.
Yeah.
They're burning shit, and then it has to add their little joke.
They were kind of close, though, weren't they? They were acquaintances, right?
Yeah.
Because they were both a big part of the Lollapalooza.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The startup of that.
And then they also like to add why the name is so ridiculous. They say pornography for pyromaniacs is, for all intents and purposes, regular pornography. Sure, there are maybe a few crazy people out there that are getting sexual pleasure from watching videos of people setting fires, but your garden variety pyromaniac isn't renting college slut matches and gasoline party 7. He's out burning down the neighborhood Costco. It turns out that they just really like burning stuff. Now, I wish this... Go ahead.
I would like to interject with a quick... With a quick story, just because it's so on topic of there, of a Norwegian TV show recently.
Oh, this shit is on fire.
Yeah, it was based on a book, and this is really real.
Do you think it has to do with...
Solid wood, all about chopping, drying, and stacking wood, and the soul of wood burning.
Do you think the burning of it has to do with, like, maybe the church burning that they used to do all the time in Norway?
I don't know. Maybe... But apparently the program was seen at some point by 20%, which means somebody turned on to it for at least a minute, 20% of the population. But it featured 4 hours of people chopping wood and then 8 hours of that wood burning in a fireplace. And it was kind of controversial because half the people that complained said they did not like the bark facing up on the wood, and the other half didn't like the bark facing down.
Picky.
I know. And that would be you could text in and recommend where you thought that the next piece of wood would be placed on the log.
Could you win something if you got $25? I got $25 on that piece of wood. It's going to be face up, motherfucker.
One lady said she couldn't even go to bed because she was so excited.
And so she just had to watch it for 8 hours?
I guess so. Well, it's 12 hours. Yeah, there's the 4 hours. I don't know. I don't know what else is on TV in Norway. So
that is Porno for Pyros.
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought so. Yeah.
That's so awesome. All right. Well, then on to our next ridiculous band name. This band also topped the list of most ridiculous bands. In my book, Nickelback. That is kind of a dumb name. Now, do you have any idea where they might have got that name? I'd never even thought about it, but this story sounds legit.
This is somebody who needed a Nickelback.
Lead singer Chad Fagnack was having trouble coming up with a band name, so he approached his brother who worked at Starbucks. The most popular coffee was $1.95, which means every customer who paid $2 got a, wait for it, a Nickelback. And they either have to say, here's your nickel back, or sorry about the homeless man shooting up heroin in the bathroom. And this is why it's ridiculous. Asking cashiers at franchise coffee shops for career advice can only end in tragedy, because Kroger suffered similar woes after having a Walmart greeter do his taxes for him, resulting in the repossession of his house. And if you walk up to a cashier behind a Starbucks counter and instead of ordering a tall Sumatran, ask them to name your shitty band, odds are you're going to get something giving people change for coffee-based.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know if that's true, but it makes sounds sense. True. Nickelback. Here's a dumb band name. I guess every band named like this would be considered dumb. The Alan Parsons Project. Here's how he got the name. Founder Alan Parsons started a project with other project administration personnel to drill down on this whole music thing. So much
that's awesome.
Now, why is it ridiculous? Well, it's one thing to just name your band after yourself, like Ego Cases, Dave Matthews, and Ben Folds. But once you've made the choice to be lazy, you're not allowed to get clever with it all afterwards. Besides, it makes the band sound like sort of an after-school activity that all the kids who didn't make the basketball team got stuck with. Today, class, we're going to build Alan Parsons from Common Household Items.
So that his name is Parsons or Parson?
Parsons. Did you know?
All right, so it doesn't sound as good if would you listen to a band called Alan Parsons?
Well, it would be a person, not a band, right? Alan Parsons.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, that's the same thinking of like Dave Matthews, right?
Dave Matthews Band.
Ah.
Ben Folds 5. Jay Giles Band.
Where's he live? Is he in one of those other 50 states?
Jay Giles? Yeah, but he's a plural. He's a Giles.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I mean,
he's
same foundation.
Detroit. He's from Detroit.
You know, I mean, I'm sure there's Catchells that were probably related just because somebody along the line
couldn't write it
make
right.
The fucking cross on there.
That C looks like a G.
Yeah.
What
you
the
know,
heck?
Things evolve.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, you have to believe in evolution.
Did you
I guess.
Know, and you probably do because you're a big Floyd head, that Alan Parsons was a big part in Dark Side of the Moon? Producer. Yeah.
He helped produce it, right?
Yeah, I think he was a producer. Yeah. Okay, number 22, ridiculous band named Stone Temple Pilots. One of the band members apparently thought that the logo on the STP car treatment spray bottles was way cool. So, yes, in case you're wondering, a lot of thought went into this as they tried to think of a name that equaled STP. So,
and that, yeah, and that's a lot of the recognition that was there. And, shit, man, was that fucking responsible for everybody wearing those?
Yeah, now all of a sudden
monkey...
they're a racehead, gearhead guy, and they're promoting Stone Temple Pilots.
Well, no, everybody's got the little, STP. Everybody's the ironic, that's not my name on my jacket.
Floyd. Oh, sorry, Floyd. I was trying to think of a name of someone I didn't know, but it didn't work out. But yeah, could you imagine the mental image of four guys flying around ancient Aztec temples? You know, Stone Temple Pilots flying around, listening to fucking cock rockers, like Meat Plow and Sex Type Thing.
Yeah. Were you a fan of those guys?
I kind of almost got tricked into being one when I heard that one song, but then I realized that
Which one, Dead and Bloated?
No, the second one, I am, because it was like, and I was like, hey, these guys kind of rock. And then he's like, I am. And I was like, well, he kind of sounds like Alice in Chains. Oh, now he kind of sounds like Nirvana. Whoa, now it sounds like Pearl Jam. Wait a minute. These guys are just stealing everything from everybody.
The plush that they played on that was the radio heavy for a long time was very Pearl Jammy.
Jank.
Yeah. But yeah. I saw him on that first tour, and I like that first album, the Core. I thought it was pretty rocking.
I saw their band that happened for a little while when Scott Weiland first freaked out, and they had another band, same three music dudes with a different singer. It was called Talk Talk.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think they only had one album. I saw them open for Foo Fighters or Soundgarden or something. But anyway, on to the next band here. Matchbox 20 made number 21. Now, that is a dumb band name. Explanations of how they got their name range from the name being a title of a song from a different band or to the band's drummer seeing the word Matchbox and the number 20 on a guy's shirt in a restaurant. Either way, shut the fuck up, Rob Thomas.
Well, how many Agreed. And how many...
Can you think of why it would be ridiculous to have a band called Matchbox 20?
Is it how many matches are in a Matchbox?
20.
That's what I think. Always figured.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Or maybe they just go, let's think of a thing and a number.
Yeah. Green 42. Hike! If you're going to pick a band name that doesn't mean shit, there's an unspoken rule that it should at least sound cool. You know, like Soundgarden or something like that. Mm-hmm. Matchbox 20 manages a triple play of mediocrity. It's incomprehensible, it's boring, and it's not even very original, given how many other generic bands showed up at the same time as Matchbox with word number combos like Blink 182, Sum 41, 13 Engines, and 7 Mary 3.
Not a fan of any of them, really.
No. Number 20, Smashing Pumpkins. I always thought that was kind of a funny name, but...
Yeah.
But
I don't know their origins.
It was a last minute. They had a show and they didn't have anything, so they just said Smashing Pumpkins.
It was kind of at that time.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of nonsensical names like that.
Apparently, even the band members weren't happy with their bass player. D'Arcy Retzky, which is hard to say, said that the name Smashing Pumpkins is a stupid name. It's a dumb, bad joke and a bad idea. But I think they were thinking that smashing was more of a British thing, like great. You know, like, oh, smashing.
Oh, maybe.
That's what it says.
Or maybe it's just around Halloween time.
Yeah.
They just got done smashing pumpkins.
All right, number 19, Def Leppard. The story here is singer Joe Elliott thought of the name Def Leppard while he was in school, but he wasn't paying attention in spelling, apparently. He said that they changed the name of Def Leppard, or the spelling of the name, from the traditional spelling of each of those words because they didn't want their band to become confused with punk bands. What, punk bands who know how to spell? I don't know. I guess there must have been a punk band over there called Def Leppard that was spelled D-E-A-F-L-E-O-P.
I know. I'm trying to think of like seeing that on an album cover, if it would have the same appeal. Because when you see the logo for Def Leppard, do you think of an actual wild cat that cannot hear?
No, and I had heard another story. I guess it must not be true, or maybe they just didn't mention it. Maybe this is where Joe Elliott got the idea. I heard that he saw a painting... Mm-hmm. of a leopard that had this weird, like, horn kind of speaker thing in its ear, kind of like to help it hear, and he thought it was a Def Leppard.
I like that story.
It doesn't say that here, but it's ridiculous.
I see Def Leppard, and even when I say it, I never think, like, a wild animal that is deaf.
No, but when I hear it...
But if I saw it spelled out as Def Leppard... I'd go, that's...
It looks weird if you ever look at it, because leopard is L-E-O-P-A-R-D,
yeah.
And it looks weird.
Yeah, I wouldn't even touch that album. I'd be like, that's dumb.
Yeah, is that a punk band or something? You know, and I'm wondering, because those guys came out late 70s, like I think their first album was 79, so they were a band in 78, maybe 77.
Wow.
Now, listen to the slew of bands that came along after them, like White Snake, White Tiger, Great White, Jackal, Rat, all these bands with animals in it, but... Mm-hmm. There's no excuse for including.
I think the Scorpions might have helped that a little bit too, right?
Oh yeah, that's right. But that's more of an insect, I guess.
Because they had the zoo.
Yeah.
And the zoo
is where
animal
animals...
magnetism.
Ooh, you're right.
Animal eyes.
Wow, that was Kiss.
Yeah, well I know that, but I mean, was that around that time? Animal eyes around.
Yeah. It was 83, I think, like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number 18, I'm sure Lance wouldn't agree, Wasp. And then now, these guys were eager for a cool-sounding metal band name, and Blackie Lawless decided to take the word Wasp and, for no reason, punctuate the shit out of it. And so they tried to come up with something, and later they said that the fans had more luck in naming it, because all they came up with...
We are silly punks.
I think it was, we ain't sure, pal. No, but I have the record.
That's fine, you know, because I think that's under the thing of, like, maybe sometimes you don't want to pick your own nickname.
So at the inside little groove at the end of the last song on the vinyl record, there's a little slick area that you can usually have numbers written in there, scratched in. On the record I had, it said, in quotes, we are sexual perverts. So it would take it. I would take that to say that that would be the most authentic because it was on the actual record.
Yeah.
Other people said we are satanic people. Yeah. Just
that
like
a popular one.
And then there's the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant.
We are sexy priests.
But you know what's even worse? When you look at Wasp song titles like L-O-V-E Machine and 95-N-A-S-T-Y, you start to suspect that they might not even know what an acronym is.
Well, they just kind of play it on throwing periods in there.
They just
think
that punctuating stuff is badass. Yeah. And number 17, Puddle of Mud with two D's. Now, that deserves to be on this list.
Is the double D at the end because of the double D in the middle?
Hey, I don't know. Well, let's check out.
Mud.
The 1993 Missouri River flood left the band's practice space a muddy mess, which led them to this name. Instead of the far better one, Missouri River Flood, that'd be a better name for a band than Puddle of Mud, I think.
Yeah.
But the reason that it's so ridiculous is, yeah, we get an extra D for no reason. And
do you call them Puddle of Mud or do you call them Puddle of Mud?
I call them Puddle of Mudded. And we get an extra of that we need for no reason. It couldn't just be Mud Puddle. No.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be Muddle of Pud. Or like, do you go to the restaurant and say, I'll have a tuna of sandwich and some chips of potato?
I thought it was just that they muddied up old classic riffs and then added their own dumb lyrics.
Yeah, exactly. Now, here's a band that made the list that I've never heard of. They're called Of Montreal. Have you ever heard of that band?
Where are they from?
They're from Athens, Georgia.
What?
Yep. That doesn't make any sense. I guess that's why it's so dumb. Frontman Kevin Barnes has told many conflicting stories about where this Athens, Georgia band got their name, but the one that seems to have gained acceptance is that he was dating a girl from Montreal, and it didn't work out. Now, the reason it's so ridiculous is, what's the word for those people who change their explanation for something 100 times before they settle on an excuse that sounds vaguely implausible? Oh, that's right. Liars!
Barnes, the White Stripes kind of imply.
Barnes named this band Of Montreal because he wanted people to think his band was from Montreal. He knew just as well as everyone else that if your group is from Montreal, you can record yourselves taking a poop on a xylophone and Pitchfork will give you a sparkling review. I don't think that's true. I've never even heard of them. Ever heard of Montreal? I'm an Of Montreal fan. In my book, there's nobody above Of Montreal. That's stupid. But, you know, the main reason that I included this list is it's coming up here, and I'm not going to give no spoilers, but it'll be kind of a cool surprise for you, as it was for me.
What's going on?
You're about to find out.
Okay.
I'm telling you why I actually left this, because some of these are kind of goofy.
Oh, you're leaving off a few?
No, I haven't left off any, but... Some of these, I should have left that last one off because it was kind of stupid. I never heard of them, but
that's good to throw one in nobody's ever heard of.
We got two or three to go before we come to the big kicker.
Sweet.
This is number 15, Goo Goo Dolls. The band found their name in an issue of True Detective magazine after a club owner called their current name the Sex Maggots unoriginal. Why it's ridiculous, just say it out loud, and there's your reason. Okay, number 14.
It's got to be better than, what was it for Sex Magnets?
Sex Maggots.
Oh, Sex Maggots. Well.
That's kind of gross.
And it's not really.
The fucking maggots.
Could you, or think of that Goo Goo Dolls song and think, hey, that was Sex Maggots with that song that.
With that Supertramp cover.
Yeah.
Give a little bit. All right, number 14, a British act. Have you heard of the?
Yeah, but I'll give it to them.
They decided to come up with a band name even more ironically detached than the band,
or the
just hell. To make Robbie Robertson feel like an asshole. A band named this overtly meta is bound to either leave most people reenacting annoying version of the Abbott and Costello routine or presuming that you have a stutter.
Well, I mean, in fairness to the band, did he name the band or was that Bob Dylan's band?
They were the band. I don't know who actually decided that when they went out on their own that they were just going to be called the band. But
But it was like Bob Dylan and the band, right?
Yeah, it was his band. But
yeah.
And then they...
Maybe they were just recognized then as, hey, man.
That's the band.
Bob Dylan's band. That's the band.
That'd be funny if you were someone's band and then you called yourself Bob Dylan's band. Even if Bob Dylan wasn't in the band anymore.
What if it was just because, like, they got tired of playing with Bob Dylan and they're like, We're the band. If you want to see Bob Dylan, he's over there, but we're the band.
Yeah, exactly. All right, number 13, Mr. Mister. The band... I just died in you. No, that's a different one. The band's name references a record by another band called Weather Report, which is a jazz band.
With Paco Jastorius.
Yeah, and they had a line in one of their songs that referred to a guy that was named Mr. Fister, which is kind of pornographic. How do you say that? Pornographic.
Yeah.
Mr. Fister. And the reason that it's a ridiculous band name, Mr. Mister Madness, is a 1-2 punch of mediocrity. They've plagiarized another idea that a band had and then changed it around just enough to obliterate all the wit and substance from the idea.
They had that big one hit.
Yeah. Give me a little song of the world or I must travel.
Is that Mr. Mister?
Pretty sure.
I thought they were the Take These Broken Wings. And
they are.
Again. Yeah.
That's two songs then.
Yeah.
Okay, now here's the kicker. Moving along to number 12, as I scrolled down and I saw this band, and I see a picture of my friend Bobby Jordan. Number 12, the Mr. T Experience.
Wow.
And there's a picture of Kevin. And
on Crack Magazine.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Crack.com. The story goes, the members of the Mr. T Experience saw Mr. T on television one night and thought for some reason it would be funny to name their band after him.
Well, so wait a minute. All right. So they're giving people shit for naming it after yourself like the Alan Parsons Project.
Yeah, but you can't name it after Mr. T either.
Yeah.
Mr. T. Here's why they think it's ridiculous. Right. What if they'd turn on the TV just a few seconds earlier in the credits? Would they have called themselves the George Pappard Explosion? Or besides, you're just inviting your audience to focus on whichever dumbass B-grade celebrity you named your band after instead of your dumbass B-grade music.
Did they incorporate...
Sorry, Frank.
Did they incorporate Mr. T into their logo or anything?
No.
Yeah, so, I mean,
they actually go by MTX.
Yeah.
Like, the CD that I have is just MTX, but people know because they've been around for, like, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, but was there another Mr. T within the band?
No.
Oh.
No. There was Frank.
But it was named after Mr. T?
Yeah.
All right.
Mr. T Experience.
Did they wear gold chains on stage?
Nope. No, but you know, that's weird that you'd say that because a lot of people are just going to be going to their concerts hoping for a dose of jibba jabba and fool pitying, and they're only going to leave heartbroken.
Fool pitying. Dude, I hope they write that song.
What, fool pitying?
Yeah.
Just another bit of fool pitying.
That's awesome.
And the jibba jabba.
Well, that's great, man. I mean, those are not very... nice words, but it's
yeah, they
magazines.
Call them B-grade rock music, but at least you, Bobby Jordan, buddy, from Val Movements, your picture's on crack.com.
I know, that's cool. That's good publicity.
And you're number 12.
Yeah,
and number 11.
Up over that.
Number 11 is a shitty band with a shitty name, Panic at the Disco. You heard
I'm
of those guys?
Familiar. No.
Yeah, they're like a new shitty band that my daughter used to kind of like when she was like 11. Anyway, named after a Smith's song called Panic, in which there is a line about a disco burning down. Note that this offers no explanation whatsoever for the exclamation point right in the middle of the phrase. Okay, here's the one I was talking about that got me onto it. Number 10, Limp Bizkit. Now, do you know what the actual term Limp Bizkit came from? I did not know this until today.
Yeah, it's tits.
Huh? Huh? Tits?
Yeah.
No.
You got limp rolls of biscuits hanging down.
Ooh, no. It's way worse. Do you think that's bad? That's good compared to this.
Really?
Rumor has it the name comes from the title of a college-style masturbation game called the Limp Bizkit, in which a group of, no doubt, highly intelligent scholars stand around a biscuit and masturbate onto it. The last guy to ejaculate has to eat it.
You hear that like the cracker game and all that or whatever, you know.
So in a metaphor,
I just think that's urban legend, but I guess in this day and age, somebody's doing it.
Well, in a metaphorical way, the American public has been losing this game every time Limp Bizkit releases a new record.
That is true.
And the reason it's ridiculous is following the naming convention of its mentor's band, Korn, Limp Bizkit had to intentionally misspell their band name because that's fat with the kids. Fred Durst was apparently operating under the impression that naming his band after a game in which a bunch of lonely white teenagers stand around jacking off in front of each other was a little too intellectually haughty, and decided to dumb it down a little for us proles. Oh, and it's pretty much never a good idea to describe your hard rock band as limp. All right, number nine, Chumbo.
They had, like, cages and shit set up.
Oh, yeah. There, right? He had 46 fucked in a fucked up rhyme. Mm-hmm.
And Wes Borland, though, he had a...
He was the cool one out of the band.
Yeah, he had an interesting style.
Except
that was kind of noisy. Noisy, kind of like Tom Morello in a way, right?
Yep.
Kind of like that kind of, I don't want to say style, but that kind of workings of finding sounds and tones on the guitar.
Now, this band's been around forever. I found out that the band of the shirt I'm wearing today, that I've been wearing for the last 5 days, played a show with them back in like 1986, Chumbawamba.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a really dumb name for a band.
Their hit was not...
representative.
Exactly the word I was thinking of, representative of
I should have just let you
song.
Say it because I fucking butchered
it. I actually... wasn't finding it.
I was going to just hold up a card, but...
Yeah.
Representative.
But, yeah, well, that's what I heard. I mean, I've only heard the one song.
Yeah, so this is a band of British anarchists with strong political opinions, and they needed a band name that resonated with the passion of their views, so they picked a gibberish word that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. But what got them all knocked down in the first place? I know they got up again, but...
I don't know. Maybe a bully?
All right.
I don't know.
International sensation of a song, though. Like viral radio.
Right.
I mean, insane. Almost, and probably more than this other song that I'm thinking of that was like that Doo-Hot song.
Oh, Rammstein?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just having a little bit of pizza indigestion there for a second. I couldn't speak. But yeah, for being a political band, you'd think they'd come up with something a little bit better than something that doesn't mean shit. Like, you know, Rage Against the Machine, they're real political.
Thought into, like, if they're so against Paula, or if they're so passionate, why not really make that use that for a message?
Well, you know, you got political band like U2, but that doesn't really mean anything. I don't know where U2 got their band. They don't make the list, but, I don't know. Chumbawamba is just a retarded name, and their only political statement to date is tub thumping, which takes the controversial stance that it's incredibly fun to get shit faced. So that's how they get knocked down.
And then they get up again, and then they Chumbawamba.
All right. I don't know if you love this band or hate them, but I know you know of them. Number eight, Enough Z'Nuff. What do you think of that band name? So here's the story.
An album I owned at one time. Come on.
Apparently, they got their name because founding member Chip Z'Nuff.
Chip Z'Nuff.
That rhymes with enough.
Yeah. So I'm going to go. That was BMG era, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. We're not even convinced that this one needs explaining. We've got misspelling, an unnecessary apostrophe, a name that implies impatience with the band itself, a horribly stupid origin story, and a guy whose name is Chip Z'Nuff.
And
it rhymes.
And the vocals on that song are somebody trying way too hard.
To sing
like that, you know? I don't know. But it cracks me up to hear it. I won't turn it, but I will turn Nickelback.
So did you understand the story of their origin? They said that they named it Enough Z'Nuff because the founding member's name was Chip Z'Nuff, and it rhymed with enough.
Mm-hmm.
That can't be true.
There's no part of that. I even question whether or not his name is Chip.
Z'Nuff, which is a big Z apostrophe.
Well,
Z'Nuff,
I know that's not his last name.
How do you know?
I just know. I don't even know if his name's Chip.
It could be French. Z'Nuff. Chip Z'Nuff. Are you serious? Okay, number seven. We've turned into French man. This is a band from the 60s. A terrible name called Mott the Hoople.
Uh-huh.
Now, what do you think of when you think of Mott the Hoople, and where do you think that came from?
Mott and the Hoople. Let's see.
No, and just Mott the Hoople.
Mott the Hoople. Let's see. Mott was an applesauce. It probably came out around 1946. Probably around World War II. Mott the Hoople. It's a guy and a dance.
It actually came from a novel of the same name about a circus freak, and it was suggested to them by their manager, who told them to change their name, which was formerly Silence, which is not a great band name, I guess. But first of all, the reason it's ridiculous because no one's ever heard of or read that book.
But would you change the name of your band if it meant a record deal?
Sure.
All right.
Well, depending on the...
But what if they turned down everything until you said, like, better than Ezra?
Yeah. I'd turn it down. All right, we're getting down there to the nitty-gritty number six. We're going to speed this up. Hoobastank.
Dumb.
In an interview, here's what the band's vocalist, Doug Robb, had to say. It's really cool. It's one of those old high school inside joke words that doesn't really mean anything. Actually, Doug...
Which means it's cool to about three people.
It's not really cool. If you're going to name your band after high school inside joke word that doesn't mean anything, why not use a word that doesn't sound like something you'd shout out if you have to wear a helmet all the time and like to chase after rabbits? Hoobastank! Hoobastank! Also, you might want to avoid names that manage to suggest in some way that your hoobas stink like shit. Comedy gold. Comedy gold.
Right that here. Is completely 100% on point.
Yes.
With every word.
Yes. Okay, number five, Toad the Wet Sprocket. Now, you might be familiar with where they have got Toad the Wet Sprocket, because I know that you're a big fan of the people that he got the name from. Monty Python. In a monologue by Eric Idle, he refers to Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Yeah.
In the sketch Knights Who Say Knee.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look, just because your band's name is intentionally ridiculous doesn't mean it doesn't count. It's like wearing a Care Bears t-shirt, ironically. Yes, you know it's a joke, but at the end of the day, you're still a grown man wearing a Care Bear shirt, and we're sorry you need to be ashamed of yourself, but in the same vein, you can talk all you want about the cred of naming your band after a Python gag, but it doesn't change the words or how stupid they sound.
Even Python only wrote it for a few minutes.
That's right. Not for five or six albums. Number four, we got 30 Odd Foot of Grunts. Familiar with that band?
No.
Russell Crowe. It's Russell Crowe's band. Oh. 30 Odd Foot of Grunts. There's competing origin stories of Russell Crowe's band, neither of which anyone even cares about. But since we're talking about it, let's get into that. Russell Crowe added up the collective height of the band members and then came up with the one word that most closely approximated his nuanced vocal stylings. Grunts.
All right.
Because, you know, if there's four of them and they're all 6 foot tall, four or five of them times 6 foot, that's 30 foot.
I wouldn't even attempt to listen to that album.
Hell no.
But I will say that I enjoyed Billy Bob Thornton's musical release, The Boxmasters.
I haven't got to check it out, but I'm sure that
even though
be
it's it's kind of how do you put it? It's kind of like I don't know. It's kind of countryish, outlawish.
Yeah.
Kind of like shut up, bitch! I'm watching the game. Give me a beer.
I love that. Okay, we got three more, and I kind of wish that they would have had them in different order because, well, they're still good ones. But Hootie and the Blowfish made number three. Nice. Darius Rucker said the band is named after two of his college choir friends, one who was nicknamed Hootie and the other one was nicknamed the Blowfish because one looked like an owl and the other one looked like a blowfish.
What about the rest of the band?
I don't know.
But Hootie the Blowfish and the other guy who looks kind of funny.
I don't know, but you know what they named the choir? That he was in high school, Darius the Black Guy and Two Ugliest Dudes on Campus. Okay, number two, Archer's.
Wait, on the Boxmasters thing too. When Billy Bob Thornton is just saying, shut up, bitch. I'm watching the game and his songs. And all you can do, you can't help but just picture that he's like saying that to Angelina Jolie.
Yeah. Shut up, bitch. Give me a beer. I've never heard of this band. I'd like to skip it, but I can't skip number two, Archers of Loaf.
I've heard of them.
What are they?
Alternative.
This is probably a good. This is probably a legitimate story. The band members apparently wanted to spend every single interview talking about their name and how they could come up with the stupidest one ever. It's clearly the result of opening the dictionary two times and using the first word one of the guys pointed to and putting an of in between it. Okay, now the number one band, stupidest, ridiculous band name. Wait.
Kiss? Cackles.
It's actually three exclamation points, but their name is... Wait, I can't do it very good because I'm not...
Is this a foreign band?
No, but they got the name from the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy. Oh. And when the clicks that the Bushmen...
Yep.
When it comes on the screen as telling you what they said, it's just exclamation points.
Mm-hmm.
So they named themselves Three Clicks. But when you write it out, it's three exclamation points.
Yeah.
And
that's hilarious.
Yeah. So
it's just funny, though. Cause I remember seeing that movie when I was a kid, but I don't remember anything about it other than it was funny.
Coke bottle fell out of an airplane.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay,
a Coke bottle and he all worshipped it.
And it hit him in the head and they thought it was something from the gods.
Yeah.
But their lead singer of three exclamation mark band, whose name I can't even begin to pronounce, I heard them masturbating all over you on NPR. Why did you name your band three exclamation marks? And he said, have you seen the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy? No. Well, then I can't explain it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that that should be number one, but I do agree with most everything that this crack.com.
It's just hard to, like, it's differently pronounced than you could read it and pronounce it. It'd be like, well, where is Prince on there, you know, with this symbol?
Oh, yeah. Fring.
Which actually,
you'll have to dub that in later.
Which actually made sense, you know, under the contract dispute, and was kind of like a fuck you to the music industry, you know, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, but I wonder how you could actually say it.
I don't know. He was known by his name anyway.
The artist formerly known as Prince, right?
Called him Prince.
But did they? Or they made a big deal about the symbol is what they did, right?
Yeah.
So that's it for my list, and I didn't realize that was going to take up so much time, but that's awesome.
Fine.
Yeah, it gave us something to talk about.
Yeah. I have a few things. How did, there was one of those. Oh, you're talking about WASP and all the,
acronyms?
Just the dots in there and the acronyms. And so I was wondering, the story of how, The Void name evolved from their first to the second.
You know, I thought that was kind of funny. I don't know why I was thinking about it. I was hearing an interview with someone about their band name and when their grandma or their mom heard about it, and it meant something else in older times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I first took that tape, the first Void tape, Demo Crazy 89, it's got a yellow cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it down there to my grandparents' house with my dad, and he's like, yeah, Terry joined a band, you know? And she's like, oh, that's cool. What are they called? And he said, they're called Void.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, well, that means when you urinate. She goes, now, why would anyone name your band that? And she goes, and look,
the tape
cover's yellow? You guys are into urination or what? And I was like, no, Grandma. It's an acronym, actually. It stands for Violent Order of Idiotic Dudes. And she's like, what is that? She pulled the Hans on me. Mm-hmm. What does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
It means we're an order of dudes, like an army of retards.
You guys weren't violent. You were just violently ordered.
Yeah. Yeah. People order us around all the time. Get over there and do that, you idiot! But yeah, I thought that was kind of funny that my grandma thought that Void just meant peeing.
Yeah. And then before the second demo, which is when you came along, right? When it started playing with them?
Yeah, in between. I was actually played bass on the Terminal Happenings, and I got to play two guitar solos.
Oh, nice.
On OTR, one on OTR and one on the first song I contributed to the band, which was called Void We Are Prohibited.
Nice, yeah.
And that was a play on words because one day I was working at my work and I heard the commercial that everybody hears about some contest going on is Void We're Prohibited by Law.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, Void We're Prohibited? What?
Yeah.
Void, that's my band. Hey,
I mean, you guys had shirts like that for a while.
Like, we're so badass, we're prohibited.
Yeah.
Void, we're prohibited. And then my friend Randy Massey, he's like, dude, that's fucking awesome, man. You need to have a song called Void, We're Prohibited. And I was like, okay. And so, like, I wrote this cheesy song, the lyrics to it, and a couple riffs. And next thing I know, the band I had just joined is, like, fleshing out this song that I wrote. And it was pretty cool because it was the first band that I'd been in. And I believe we were still Violent Order of Idiotic Dudes. Yeah, on Terminal Happenings, because it actually said that in the song. It said, we don't shoot up heroin or take Quaaludes because we're the Violent Order of Idiotic Dudes.
Nice.
And Void We're Prohibited, prohibited by law, prohibited by society, prohibited by God, prohibited by everyone except for you because we're the Violent Order of Idiotic Dudes.
That's sweet.
So that's kind of tongue-in-cheek, cheesy early 90s metal,
oh, sure.
But that's what we were doing at the time.
Yeah.
Lance and Dane and those guys were writing songs about Bart Simpson
and
beer
runs.
Yeah, you know. So yeah, I just kind of said, this is what these guys are doing. I could do something like that. I can write rhymes like the best of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then I think, we just started getting into more serious music and stuff and got to thinking that moniker was a little bit too goofy for the seriousness that we wanted to obtain by going more death metal.
You're pulling it from that, like we were saying, the high school.
Young hardcore friend.
Yeah.
Don't care about nothing except for partying. Mm-hmm. We're writing songs about chicks and drinking beer. And then all of a sudden we've grown up a little bit. We want to get serious and sing about death and destruction and doom and bad things that happen to people for no reason.
Yeah, you guys evolved naturally.
What we did is we started
songwriting
smoking,
and musically and
we started
stuff.
Smoking a lot of weed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they started smoking a lot of weed. I continued to smoke a lot of weed. And then that was it.
Yeah.
And then victims, you know, I noticed one thing when we actually got a review in some magazine like Guitar World or Guitar Player. Uh-huh. I think it was Guitar Player magazine.
Yeah.
And I believe it was actually reviewed by Jeff Gilbert, Ed Shred.
Nice.
If I think back, because he was writing for The Rocket at the time. And we were in Seattle, had done a show, and we walked down to the pier, the Fisherman's Market down there in Seattle, and thumbing through Guitar magazine with ZZ Top on the cover. And here's a review for Victims of Internal Decay, self-titled debut. And I don't remember if it was that review. Now that I'm thinking about it, my mind is changing inside my mind. But one of the reviews we got said, can't believe how much of a difference one demo can make, you know, because it went from Dead Fish White to boom, self-titled.
Oh, scene. Yeah.
And it's like they were just...
Well, how much time was between the time that you guys wrote the songs for Dead Fish White and the time that you guys started writing the material for the self-titled?
It was a weird transitionary period because that was about the time that Dane left the group and I moved to guitar and Lance started growling like a bear more often and Pat started concentrating on his double bass and more blast beats and different instead of just hardcore thrashy type beats and punk stuff that he was comfortable with doing. We all just started branching out, but I don't know. I guess it took about a year to write those 10 songs, and we remodeled one of them. False Hate was actually on Dead Fish White. And we kind of changed a couple parts and retooled that song and recorded that on the CD as well. So we were kind of just, I don't know, we were going in a different direction, and it was a pretty awesome time, I think.
Yeah, I have been looking at them lately. I burned them all, put them all on my computer, and been getting ready to scan some of the original artwork.
Yeah, and if you listen to like a song off Dead Fish White and then listen to a song off the self-titled debut, huge difference, and not only in production but in songwriting and musicianship and all that stuff. So
yeah, you guys, yeah, the naturally evolution of playing together, you know, and
sure,
the chemistry that you guys had. But speaking of which, and I this might take a little extra time, but I'm not worried about it. But Pat just texted me and it came through 4 times.
I've been getting a double message from him sometimes.
So you
never
know when somebody's like, it won't send, so you're just like this, and then you figure, I don't know if that's what went on. You know, I don't know.
Happens on Facebook sometimes, too. If I'm getting a bad signal, it'll say, no internet connection. I'll keep pushing the signal. Yeah, I'll go back, and it'll be four comments posted the same thing. I'm like, fucking goddamn it.
And then you got to go and remove. It's like seven other fucking button pushes. But he said,
what's he talking about?
He's been texting me quite a bit about this subject, and he's got some hots going. My wife is watching Survivor. He's not a big fan of Survivor.
Nope.
He said he walked by accidentally on his way to bleed the lizard and just threw up in his mouth a little bit.
Because he had to see a scene from Survivor?
No, yeah. He had to, on his way to bleed the lizard.
Wow.
Yep.
Sounds like a
somebody
issue.
Just went Tonya Harding on his gut, he said. He loves ripping on Survivor. It's fun for him, but I thought, dude, if that was like... that was like 10 minutes ago. I wonder what would happen if we called him.
Dude, when I talked to him the other day, he's like, yeah, I got your message when you called for the podcast. I said, I'm sure you did. You probably saw the phone ringing as it was ringing. But do you answer it? No. He did come to practice again the other night at Griefhammer.
Right on. He did say Survivor was better than Paranormal State. Have you watched Paranormal State?
I have not.
Me neither.
One of the kids around the house has been recording Ghost Hunters and Paranormal State and then, like, not watching them and then putting locks on them to, like, so you can't erase it, but they don't. It says locked, but all you got to do is delete it because it's just a visual thing. Like, don't erase this because I want
to. Well, I don't think it automatically erases if it goes down to the bottom. You know how it'll.
Yeah.
It'll keep it. And then skip the next one.
Well, see, because I have to go through every week and erase a bunch of shit because everybody records a lot of shit, and then it gets full.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm not into those paranormal fucking bullshit. Because
I didn't even know what it was.
Before, I don't really, I've never experienced it, so I don't really. I want someone who's out there who knows where there's some fucking paranormal shit. Do you think you can scare me? You think you can scare me and make me believe ghosts? I'm not afraid of it. I would love to see something. That way I wouldn't have to be a skeptic.
Would
anymore.
You spend a weekend in a haunted house?
For sure.
All right.
Totally.
I'm going to set that up.
As long as there was no physical danger to me, like some crackhead or somebody going to rob me.
Well, of course.
A safe place where the only damage to me is going to be spiritual or emotional, which is what I crave. I crave spiritual and emotional torture, and I can't get
and
it
distress.
Anywhere. Yes, and I just want someone to come through and go, ooh,
what about,
look at me. I'm a white sheet with two holes in my
face. I wonder if any of the Grange halls around here are haunted.
I've got people telling me, oh, this house is haunted. I got people telling me my house is haunted. I got my wife telling me my mom is in that house. My mom has passed away 20-some years ago. Mm-hmm. I've never seen her or felt her there before, and she didn't even die in that house. My parents divorced in 1982, and she didn't die until 91. She lived somewhere else. And I told her, if she didn't die here, why would her spirit be here? And she goes, because this was her home. And when her spirit left her body, it came back to this house. And I'm like, that's such a fucking bunch of bullshit. And she's like, if you don't want to believe it, that's fine. It's not that I don't want to believe it. I just don't have proof.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, of course.
I want to believe that Jesus fucking died for our sins and that God's going to save us all and that I can pray real hard.
Yeah,
and I can't.
If you haven't seen it, you know, I mean.
I hate to be a skeptic, but it's seeing is believing.
Yeah.
Feeling is believing.
Yeah. If you know, I have no doubt that if you felt the presence there, that you would. I don't think you'd deny it.
I almost have the. I want.
Yeah.
I have the desire to see it and to feel that cold draft out of nowhere and feel someone brush across my arm and scare the fuck out of me to where I go, okay.
You've never had that feeling ever, though?
Never.
Like. Just got a sudden chill. You've never got a sudden
chill.
Just like a thought, like, whoa, that's weird. I wonder if that's like.
I call it a grill chill.
A grill chill?
Me and Pat used to call that like it's a flashback, a quick flashback to an acid trip.
Oh, okay.
You get a little grill chill. Ooh.
Uh-huh.
I get a good chill listening to a excellent song, certain spot.
Mm-hmm.
My whole fucking just turns into goose skin and I'm like, that's just a feeling. That's an emotion.
Yeah.
That's something that you're feeling. Like when you meet a girl.
But you've never had that just like
for
sitting
no
there
reason.
In your house.
Oh, you get an occasional, ooh, like me, and you think, oh, I was cold, but I've never associated it with any kind of spirit. I've never seen anything move. I've seen all these movies.
Well, I think in a chilling situation, because I've kind of felt chills of a spiritual nature, but
probably
it always comes with
those movies.
With a little bit of a, you know, you feel it more than just like a, ooh, you know, you almost get like a watering in your eyes, you know, that kind of a thing.
My wife gets that shit hardcore.
Yeah.
And do you ever get any intense deja vu every once in a while? Anytime?
Sometimes I'll have like a good 10, 15 second, like even the thinking of it being deja vu is a deja vu.
Right. Yeah. And then it just starts looping out.
Yeah, and then I'll like
my wife
just
will
end out. I won't even think of it ending. It'll just end.
She'll get in tears, like, "Oh my God, is there?" And I'm like, "What?" And she's like, "This totally just happened, but there's no way that it ever happened." I was like, "So that's okay." And she goes, "No, it's not. What does that mean?" So I don't know if I mentioned this. I hope I didn't, because I hate to be redundant, but you might remember if I said it or not. And if I did, you can stop me. But I was at the Pajama People.
Mm-hmm.
Practice, and he was hooking up an amp, getting ready to make room for me to put my amp. Did I tell you about that?
Uh-huh. No.
Okay. And he bent down, and he goes, "Okay, play," to his wife, and she played, and it worked. He's all, "Oh, good, it works." And I was like, "What's that for?" I said, "What's that for?" And he's like, "Whoa." He goes, "That was an intense deja vu." And I go, "Really?" I go, "Well, everything was set up just like this the other time that I practiced here." He goes, "Yeah, but we just got this amp." He goes, "And I was setting it up, told her to test it. She did it. I said, 'It works.' And you said, 'What's that for?' And I go, 'Yeah, that's what just happened.' He goes, 'That was the deja vu.' He goes, 'I dreamed that or something.' I go, 'Does that bother you?' And he's like, 'No.' He goes, 'I think it's kind of cool.' And then I told him, my wife gets freaked out, and he's like, 'It's just a premonition type thing is what he thinks it is. Just something you dreamed that you knew somehow subconsciously that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Or else your mind is just playing a trick on you by doubling the memory real quick and going, wait, did that already happen or did it just happen?'"
That could be too, because, it could just be a little mind trick. Like, it could
Jedi
just double the memory.
Yeah.
It's and like, then, and
make a copy, and they copied and paste, but they double clicked, and mm-hmm. it went, and it replayed it real quick.
Yeah, My mama once told me that, well, I remember this day, she told me that she had a dream.
I had a dream!
And she woke up in the morning at like 7 o'clock, but her dream was that a train on tracks, there was a truck stopped on the tracks and a train smashed into it. She said she woke up and looked. It was like 7 o'clock. And in that paper later that day, it happened like 10 minutes later.
You told me about that, I think, on season one or something.
Yeah.
We talked about.
Like, you know, and I think, you know, there are premonition dreams like that. And I think there's, you know, just as there are dreams of just working out your daily stresses and stuff, just as there are dreams that mean nothing.
Yeah.
You know, there's different sorts of dreams. They don't all have to mean something.
These dreams.
Just because you dream of dancing pickles in a window, or, you know.
So your mom told you that story?
Yeah. I remember the day she told me about it. And that was a chilling moment for me.
When I was little, my mama told me, "You better hop around." Because I only had one leg.
Uh-huh.
Man, that was a good pizza ball.
Yeah.
Pizza now.
Pizza.
Hey, we're going over today because we don't care because it's our last episode.
I know. That's what
we're
I thought,
miss
too.
We're going to miss you guys. Are we going to take taking a week off, or are we just going to roll through?
I think we just roll through.
You guys can't go a week without us.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to Pat the other day.
God, that's Pat.
He was talking. Survivor's on once a week.
Not but twice?
He's texting me like every day about
maybe she DVRs Survivor. It and watches a little bit every day.
Maybe, yeah. And then I think he just has fun, you know, ripping on Survivor. Obviously, it's not killing him. But he did say this about Survivor. He said, "Derp."
Derp.
So I wanted to get your opinion on the thought of Pat shouting "derp." First of all, what does derp mean? Do you know, like, derp and that kind of lingo?
I think that's from South Park, isn't it?
Oh, is it that kind of derp?
Derpa!
Because there's also, you know, amongst the young kids, there's the erpy, derpy, lerpy.
Oh, no. It's
that
like kind
of lingo.
Ermagerd.
Yeah, Ermagerd.
Oh, my God.
That picture is funny, but I hate seeing. I just. I'm not
our
a big
daughter,
fan of repeat memes.
Our daughter, 14 years old, says Ermagerd, and Ermagerd, mom. She like say all of her words like that. Stop it.
Yeah, so I guess I wasn't thinking of the South Park derp. I was.
Derp!
I was thinking of like what kind of herpy derpy. I'm feeling derpy.
Herpa derpa. Derpa derpy. Derp derp derp. Derpy derp derp. It's Rob Snyder.
Where the hell is that picture from? What is that? You know what picture I'm talking about?
The Ermagerd.
The Ermagerd chick?
Which I don't know which. I've seen a couple, I think. Which
one? She's the one who's got the braces or whatever and a big old smile, and it's all from the 70s, and she's got the pigtails sticking out in the side.
I don't know where that picture's from, but I think I have seen it. But doesn't that come from a... This summer, it's Rob Schneider as a stapler. Derp, derp, derpa. It's Rob Schneider as a carrot. Oh, I'm a carrot. And then the third one is like, coming this summer, it's Rob Schneider as derp, 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 and derp, derp.
Yeah, that is a classic episode.
Derp and derp. Derpa. Derp.
That is a classic episode.
Hans, what do you think of derp?
What's in Hans's derpa derpa? Find out now and probably...
That chick is stoked.
The Ermagerd, she's got three goose bum books and a backpack for Christmas. And
I got a backpack, Mom.
Even though it looks like she's about ready to be put in the closet.
Ermagerd, wear a helmet, say derpa derpa. Oh my God.
I can only hope that one of my pictures would be used like that. We got Aaron got his in there, right?
Oh yeah,
with the banana.
Everybody needs their potassium. He's went totally viral as did, I'll mention this after we get to Hans' CD player because talking about Aaron, the bass player from Yob. Actually, they went out to Chicago and just played a show with. Indian, which is what Hans is listening to today. He's listening to the latest. Well, I think they might have another one, but the latest I have, it's called Guiltless.
Are you sure he's listening? He's listening to the band and not the Orange Frampton hit? Indian?
It might be.
An Indian.
That's what I'm going to throw out to Hans. Have you ever heard any Orange Frampton recordings?
Wow.
Because those guys are good. They have a song called 418.
We got about five songs on Bandcamp.
And there are some also, associated acts like Cornby Scramash.
Yeah, Cornby Scramash. It was corned beef.
Scrambled eggs.
Corned beef fam. No, corned beef fash. Scrambled eggs. And ash browns.
Herd duck and pig.
Yep. And we had one demo of the breakfast sessions.
Wow.
No one really wanted to be Ash Browns of the band.
Ash Brownies.
So we never really said who was who.
And, you know, I've been slacking on listening to, but I think I did listen to one thing since I listened the other day. I was listening to the podcast. I listened to that Witch Mountain. I can't really stop listening to it.
Uh-huh.
It's called Cauldron of the Wild.
And, LT was listening to that the other day in his car.
Dude, it's good, man. I like it better than their South of Salem, which I believe this new one is the second album with their female lead vocalist, Uta Plotkin, which is just a fun name to say. And, God, she's a sex pot.
I know. That's what I hear.
She is just exuding with emotion when she sings, and she just looks like a – and she's getting more hardcore looking all the time. I think she dyed her hair black or something, and damn –
nice.
There needs to be more girls like her. And she's doing more death metal-ish kind of growls and stuff instead of just singing like Ann Wilson from Heart.
Is she going to be the South of Salem? That sounds like that would be a good song, or some of that material would fit nicely in that new Rob Zombie movie.
Is that going to be a movie about the Salem witch trials?
No, it's like Salem's Lot or something, isn't it? Return to Salem?
Oh, yeah. That's the Salem witch trials, yeah. I mean, that's not what it's called, but that's what it's about. Salem, yeah. And witches and shit.
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I've tried to watch Salem's Lot, and that's a Stephen King book, right?
Yeah.
You've read it, I imagine, right?
And the movie had David Soul in it from Starsky and Hutch.
See, I've tried to watch it, but when I did, it seemed kind of dated.
Oh, of course, it's from 1975.
Yeah, and so, I mean, yeah.
It never gets any newer. You can watch it tomorrow, and it's still going to be.
Of course. But you always hear about it being like an epic, terrifying, kind of chilling. Maybe it's a chilling movie.
Yeah, I think it's more chilling than scary or
yeah,
epic.
And so I think that I kind of like expected it to be a little bit different, so I kind of didn't really follow it, and so I never really went back and tried to watch it, but I should.
Yeah.
You know, that and the classics like are the same, I could say, for Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, man. That's such a slow watch, but it's fucking creepy as hell. Mm-hmm. And
or Sophie's Choice. Is that even a horror movie?
I don't think so. I don't believe so, but let's look into that. Anything with an apostrophe S and an object after it, you know, like Rosemary's Baby, Sophie's Choice, something's Lot. Is there a lot?
Salem's Lot.
Oh,
and the return to Salem's Lot, right?
And the return of the son of Salem's Lot. The Langoliers. No.
Yeah. Ooh. That was something we were going to talk about. Maybe coming up in season 4, we'll talk about some Stephen King miniseries.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got, oh, man. Yeah. Did you hear about the new one?
No, we will talk about it.
There's a new miniseries coming out of Stephen King of a book that I read a couple years ago that as I was reading the book, I could not stop telling everyone this would be such an awesome movie or a miniseries. And now they fucking stole my idea. No, they didn't really. But that just brings me to this. Also, Hans had a question for us tagcasters, as he has been doing every week. What is the last book that you read or are currently reading?
Me?
You and I, but you first. Ladies first.
You know,
I mean, Indians first.
I have, I'm going to get boring here.
That's all right. That's what this show's all about.
I've been reading a book on the Kindle about just some free readings on nonprofit management.
Right on. That's not bad.
Yeah, but it's not boring. Go ahead, and I'll try to think of a more exciting, like a fiction book I've read recently.
Okay. Now, recently, I just downloaded a new Frank Zappa biography called The Electric Don Quixote.
Nice.
And it's written by a guy who was close in with I got a sample for free, because you can do that on your Kindle. And I read it, made sure that the writing was something that I could enjoy because I've got books before where the subject matter was awesome, but the writing, not my style. There was a Kurt Cobain biop that it was written by a
Nick
overseas dude, and I didn't like the way that he wrote. But anyway, the other book that I haven't finished, but it's a collection of short stories recently released by Stephen King. It's called Just After Sunset.
After sunset.
There you go, Hans. And also, if you're looking for something to read, I don't know if you like Stephen King at all, but there's a book out called Under the Dome.
Ah.
And they're getting ready to make a miniseries. It'd be a perfect time for you to read it because once you get it read, then you could watch it on TV. I'm kind of disappointed, though, because it happens with most of Stephen King stuff. It's on a network, you know, so it's going to be pretty dumbed down.
I was talking about this the other day. And this is going to be a tangent. Ah!
The Dixie?
You know the movie The Amazing Wonderstone?
No.
The upcoming movie. With Burt Wonderstone, Steve Carell.
Oh, you were telling me about it, and Jim Carrey and all those guys?
Yeah, Steve Buscemi.
And you said that you wanted it to be a miniseries? Oh,
maybe we already talked about that.
Yeah, we did. You said too many characters of good nature to be fleshed out to pack it into a movie. They said, wouldn't you rather watch a 17?
I thought about that the other day.
Yeah, no, it was the other day, and then you talked about it. And then we talked about, comparing it to 24, which I never did get to, and we said that we were going to be talking about it. I don't really care if we do, but just in case anybody cares, I think I've got like 4 episodes left until I get to the end of season 2. Boy, this has been a real nail biter for season 2. I'm not even kidding around.
All right, what do you think? I've seen season 1.
Okay.
So
what happened in season 1 was there was going to be what? An assassination on the president.
There's going to be an assassination on the president, and Burt ran around in her cheerleading outfit.
Well, yeah, it was a cheerleader top. But then later, after like 18 hours or so, she got out, got away, and got to get changed into the
regular clothes. That's what I was thinking. My memory of, and maybe we already talked about this, but as demonstrated last topic. But it was kind of slow, like episodes, hours 13 to 18.
Yeah,
like a lot of like a filler.
That happened in season 2 a little bit too, because the season 2 actually started at 8 a.m.
Mm-hmm. I watched the first few 5 episodes, like background.
Right,
stuff.
And so what the deal is there's a nuclear bomb threat, and so they need to find out where the bomb is. Then they come to find out that... the bomb was planted by someone who wasn't taking credit for it, and they were just trying to start a war so they could up their prices of their oil. Well, now we are to a point. I don't know. This is from 2002, so I doubt if it's a spoiler. But if you want to watch 24 and you don't want to hear what happens,
his wife died at the end of the first series, right? And that's why he took the break, because I was trying to remember what happened there.
Now, did you get far enough to where Jack Bauer is flying the nuclear bomb in a plane out to the desert so it can blow up, and it's going to be a suicide mission because he's the only one that could do it? Now,
I think I'm getting to about where they're just about ready. He's like, I know what I must do.
Knowing in retrospect, in hindsight, as they say, is 20/20. There's 7 more seasons. Jack Bauer ain't dying until the season's over, right? Okay, so he's flying out, and then there's this guy who was his boss who had got subjected to radiation, plutonium. He inhaled it, and so he's got less than 24 hours to live. He snuck on the plane, and then they get a couple... 10 minutes before where they're going to drop the plane and the bomb, and he comes out from the back and says, "Here's a parachute, Jack. I'm going to die anyway, you know." So
yeah,
and then so his daughter thought he was dead, and then these people get him and they're trying to get a microchip from him. They fucking zap him and torture him and burn him and do all these things, and then he dies, and then they revive him. Not less than 5 minutes after he was just dead, he's up shooting people and kicking people's asses.
Well, just like, what's his name, Jack Flack came out of the plane after a burst into flames at the end of Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, and he still has never pissed, even in season 2.
Has he eaten?
He did eat in season 1. In season 2, he did not, and he has been attacked, he's been tortured, he's chased people, he's been in several shootouts, he's been choked out, and... he's just happy that his.
You know what'd be fun though is like to add the element that he is hungry. He hasn't eaten, and the whole time he's like he's just trying to get a meal. So like in the off times, he's like he's making a quick call. Hey, can I get some Chinese? I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna be right by that area in about 15 minutes. I'm gonna get there. And then next thing you know, he can't get there for some reason because he went somewhere else. And now he's like, he's calling a pizza place, and he's trying to get that worked out, and it just ain't working out for him, and he never gets to eat all day.
And granted, you know, who wants to watch anybody eating as part of a plot, you know? But I think they could strategically place it to where, like, maybe 10 seconds before they cut to commercial, he grabs a sandwich.
And then it slaps out of his hand. Beep, he never gets to eat.
Beep. And then it comes back on, and he's just putting it away and wiping his mouth off. And so you've taken care of a 4-minute eating binge.
Dude, they should have brought in Sandberg for his great skit.
Dick in a box.
No, when he punches people right about before they eat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You just punch him right in the face.
Did you see Grohl on that one? Yeah, Grohl was on there.
I got to see it.
Yeah, he was about ready to eat some fries. Grohl was pretty sly. I don't think he got punched.
I knew it was coming.
No, I think, what's his name? Hawks.
Oh.
I think he, like, popped up and punched Sandberg, and Dave didn't even know he was there.
Yeah, so now the vice president is trying to overthrow. They're throwing out the 25th Amendment at the Allstate dude, which is only supposed to be reserved for when presidents get sick or ill, and they say that the president is not able to do his job. Well, they're accusing the Allstate dude of not being able to do his job because he called back the troops that they were going to attack this other country, which they think that they gave us a nuclear bomb, but really it was planted by someone else, and it turned out it's the fucking dude from Saw.
What?
Yeah, the old Hooper? Guy. Jigsaw. Or, yeah, not Jigsaw. Yeah, Hooper. He rolled
See,
in
that's
on,
what I'm talking about.
He rolled in on a tricycle and he's like, I need
Dude,
that memory chip.
That'd be chip. Badass. That'd be badass, and it wouldn't even have to do with the
He's like,
oh, man.
And you know there's only 6 episodes left, Bauer. You've got 6 hours to figure out this puzzle, and if you don't, the chains will start rising and pulling the skin from your daughter's neck.
And all the time she's in a safe right next to you.
Now, when did the first Saw come out? Because I keep seeing these people going, fuck, what's this dude? Oh, he's not him yet. Oh, he's not the Allstate dude yet. Oh, is he the Saw guy?
It was
before 2000.
I've been around the same time.
Yeah. And who else? God, people just keep showing up. But yeah, so they're trying to overthrow the president.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big board meeting, and they just voted against him, and now Jack Bauer's bringing the thing. And it's just like, ugh, it's almost so much overkill cliffhanger. Every time.
It is. I think that was the power that the show ran on, other than, you know, the nail biting.
Right.
You know, I mean,
I'm down to my cuticles.
Who produced it?
One of them
was this Abrams.
One of them was that had, I think, something to do. Every time I see it, I think of Arrested Development, but it's not that Hurwitz guy. But God, I can't think of names anymore. Ever when I want to, only when I don't want to.
It seems Abramsy. You know, because Abrams has that nail bite. He can take
I noticed
shit
that there's
and make it nail biting.
I noticed,
but
there's usually a different
Lost.
Writers. I notice I try to see who wrote it, if it's consistent with who wrote the episode.
Different
writers. I don't know about that. I haven't paid attention to the directors, but it's produced by that Stephen Graff. Is that his name? I can't remember. So instead of trying to remember, I'm just going to jump over here to celebrity birthdays. We just got a few here.
I got a couple rewinds real quick. If I can before that. You know anybody that does a Third Amendment joke of a comic?
I'm not familiar off the top of my head what the Third Amendment is.
That's the joke. I'm sorry.
That's pretty good.
No.
$1.50?
No. I heard it on 990 Comedy. I was wondering if you knew of the comic that does it. It's a Third Amendment joke, and the whole joke, he just keeps talking about Third Amendment. He's like, nobody knows what it is. Everybody talks about the First Amendment, Second Amendment. Nobody knows. Third Amendment, you get pulled over. I say, why are you speeding? I said, this is my Third Amendment right. He had to look it up.
Everybody knows about the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah. And he's like, they asked me what the Third Amendment was. That's when take the Fifth. It was a great bit, and so I want to know who does it. And so...
Oh, so it was a guy doing stand-up on the radio.
Yeah, it was a recording. The comedy station where they play the different bits, and they usually announce it, but I didn't...
Well, can't you Google Third Amendment comedy bit?
I'm going to.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Going to,
jeez.
But first I'm already on the film producer of 24, which is...
There's two co-producer names that come up right at the end before it says...
Also, again, is I go for 24 producer.
Is there Stephen Graff? Is that a name? Is that a thing?
I don't know. Howard Gordon?
Nope. It's one of those things where when I hear it, I will know
created
it.
Created by Joel Cerno, Robert Cochran.
I see Robert Cochran's name a lot.
Joel Cerno, Robert Cochran, Brian Grazer, Howard Gordon.
Brian Grazer, that's the one. Doesn't he have something to do with something that... Brian Grazer was. Brian Grazer is the name that I see, and
Chip Johansson, otherwise known as Chip Zenuff.
Chip Zenuff.
You mean that guy?
I don't know. I don't know what they
He's
look like.
He's got a nice under a V-neck undershirt visible with his tie. At the Tribeca. Yeah, he described himself as half Jewish.
Oh, so he does have something to do, I think, with
A Beautiful Mind.
Arrested Development, because he has a company with Ron Howard.
Yeah, imagine.
Imagine that. Well, guess
what? Imagine's done a lot. Apollo 13 and all that kind of stuff.
So that's fucking weird.
Splash.
Check this out.
Frost Nixon.
It's Ron Howard's birthday today. Happy birthday, Ronnie.
Happy birthday, Ronnie!
Opie Cunningham! Opie Cunningham! Opie Cunningham! He's, oh, wait. You want to do your ad addition to see if you can guess how old Opie Cunningham is?
Oh, man. Let's see. Arrested Development was, what, about 2010?
Go from Happy Days.
Happy Days is at 73?
No.
77.
80s.
What?
Late 70s, 80s.
77?
77, 78, yeah.
Man, he was young there.
Well, I think of Andy Griffith show. He
50,
was young,
yeah. I'm going to go, he's 63.
That's close, he's 60. Now, Brian Grazer also teamed up with Ron Howard for Night Shift and Splash. And
I was a big fan of Night Shift with Bull Shannon.
No, that's a different one. And he did Parenthood and Backdraft and Apollo 13, Beautiful Mind, 8 Mile.
8 Mile?
Yep. Boomerang, Nutty Professor, Dr. Seuss, Grinch Stole Christmas, Intolerable Cruelty, The Dilemma, Inside Man, Da Vinci Code, American Gangster.
He's just got a lot of money.
I guess.
I mean, because that's what a producer does after you got billions. You just start like, yeah, I'll finance that film. Fuck it.
Oh, and here I am. Here I am correct again. Television series includes Sports Night, Felicity, Arrested Development, 24, Friday Night Lights, Parenthood, and Lie to Me with Tim Roth. So bam, bam, bada boom. And he's a funny looking dude, man. Look at him. He looks like he's all coked out or something.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's got that V-neck undershirt you could see.
And his hair's all blown back like. But there's probably no wind going on at the time. So, yeah, happy birthday to Ron Howard and also a singer that we were just talking about on Wednesday and how awesome his voice is, Roger Daltrey's birthday today, Friday, March 1st. And how old do you think Roger Daltrey is today?
Singer from The Who.
Yes, that is him. But how old do you think he is?
Keith Moon died in 1980.
76.
Was it 76 he died?
No, I thought that was going to be your answer.
Oh, okay. Keith Moon
died in 78.
Keith Moon died in 78?
Yeah.
And he was pretty old, right? He was like 30.
Something around there, yeah.
He was 30. He was a lot older than I thought he was. I thought he died more along 24. And they went to school together, right?
Not sure, but probably.
I'm making that up.
Yeah.
I know, yeah. And then, so, that was in 78. He died, and he was about 48, so you got about 53. He's about 68.
Whoa, that was close. He just turned 69, so technically today that we're recording, he is 68, so you are correct.
That's cool.
And Daisy Duke, the original Daisy Duke, Catherine Bach, remember her long legs and her Daisy Duke shorts? That's the only reason I mention her, because she was such a crush when you're
all right,
a kid.
I'm going to guess, though, that she was 40 when the Dukes of Hazzard was on the air.
Yeah. How old do you think she is in comparison to, like, Ron Howard?
I think right now she's probably about 68. She's probably very close to those guys.
She's 59.
Whoa! I'm
Ron Howard, 60.
Sorry, Daisy. Yeah. That means she was probably about 30 at the show, right?
Yeah, so that means she's pretty hot.
Yeah?
Pretty hot to trot.
Mm-hmm.
Daisy Duke. So that's all the birthdays. No friends' birthdays going on today. And that's all I got for our segments. You got anything that you want Hans to try listening to?
Yeah, I did have something. I wanted to go. I was thinking about.
You forgot.
Well, no. Before that, I'm going to go back to your Stephen King-ness.
Oh yeah.
What is your take on the Dark Towers controversy?
Hated it. I don't know what the controversy is. I just don't like those, and I never read them. I tried, and I don't.
Oh, well, no. Maybe that's controversy. That controversy is some people don't like them, and some people like them. Or some, maybe it took a long time for them to do it, or they didn't like, fans didn't like
the Gunslinger,
direction.
Dark Tower, I don't get it. I don't get it, and I don't know why I don't get it, but I don't.
I don't know the controversy either. I figured if I said that you would know what I was talking about.
You got me all riled up now, goddammit.
Yeah.
I fucking hate those books.
Oh, I was going to ask.
That fucking Dance Macabre. God, that's stupid.
Are you, kidding, this Steve. Is what I was going to ask.
I am
Hans,
curious.
And I'll ask you too. What is your take on Clive Barker? Are you a Clive Barker fan?
I like Clive with some of his stuff. We talked a little bit about it when we were talking about horror movies a few weeks ago, but I can't remember. I got him confused with John Carpenter. Clive Barker.
Clive is more of a
Hellraiser,
writer.
Right? Hellraiser?
Mm-hmm. And The Lord of Illusions. His movies are kind of cheesy. I think he did Nightbreed.
I did like the original Hellraiser when it first came out. Now that I watch it now, it doesn't. Not as cool.
His movies do not, you know, they're pretty campy.
Yeah, they don't really stand up to the test of time.
Yeah, even is more mainstream, even like The Lord of Illusions. It was all based on a short story, but his writing,
I remember watching that movie when it came out, and I remember recording it onto a VHS tape so I could watch it repeatedly, but I would have to rewatch it to get my brain refreshed of exactly what it was about, but it was kind of spooky, kind of campy, kind of scary, kind of horror-ish.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like Clive Barker. I don't read a lot. I tried reading Dean Koontz a bit. I like to read Stephen King a lot just because I'm partial to it. And I read a lot of biography stuff about musicians because I like to read about that stuff and learn about what people were doing when I was not doing anything.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I guess that was my thought to Hans was if he reads any Clive Barkers since he asked about those. I really enjoyed... The Great and Secret Show was a fun book, even though it's been 20 years since he wrote part two, and I'm still waiting for a part three.
Yeah, I'm pretty, I was on the fence a bit, but now I think I'm kind of a little bit excited. I would like to watch or to read the new Shining sequel, which is called.
You think it's.
I can't remember what it's called, but it's about the life of Danny, the young boy who's all grown up, and he has a lot of mental problems because of his Shining and some other different stuff. But I'm kind of on the fence, but more stoked about what we talked about earlier about that book Under the Dome, which is going to be a miniseries, so that will be good. So watch for that this summer. I think it starts in June on CBS. And if you haven't read the book, you should, because it's a great one.
I didn't realize he'd done like 20 series, miniseries and TV movies.
Stephen King?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was like the easily forgotten about ones like The Golden Years and Rose Red and
I would have thought, wasn't Needful Things a series?
I think that was,
or was that just a movie?
That was a long movie.
That would have been a nice series.
Yeah.
You know, they could have... And I think there was that recent series where that guy sat in the booth. And it was kind of like, I give wishes.
Was it a Stephen King thing?
No, but it was kind of maybe in that same kind of premise, loosely.
Loosely based?
Yeah, you know, or you give something, you get something. But it's a little bit more than you intended to give.
You want some ice cream, Doc?
Yeah. That was it. That was a fun movie. Yeah. Was that a made-for-TV movie or was that a release?
Needful Things?
Yeah.
Pretty sure that was a movie.
Yeah.
And it had that old, I thought, Max von Sydow in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a creepy old dude.
Yeah. Yeah, that made it pretty fun. And then that one with the preacher and had the pitchfork.
Yeah.
And y'all's all going crazy at the end.
And did you?
Get you,
I think it came out within the last year, Bag of Bones. Did you ever watch that? That was on like AMC or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had read that book and I loved it. And the adaptation was all right. It was a 2-part miniseries, 4 hours, and it starred Pierce Brosnan, which I don't care too much for him. He was pretty cool in Remington Steele, I guess, but I never dug him as James Bond. Mm-hmm. But I like that show, and if anyone gets it, I think it's on Netflix as well. It's a long watch. You can't really watch it all at once. Kind of like The Green Mile. You got to watch it in installments when you got a 3.5-hour movie. But
yeah,
Bag of Bones, good book, and a good little mini series of sorts. So, yeah. Oh, man, we held you guys over extra detention today because it's our last episode of the season.
I know, I'm still trying to figure out who that comedian is who did the Third Amendment joke.
I can't believe anybody hasn't called in yet and told us. I know. The phones are not even lighting up. Bring. Bring. Well, if you can find out, anybody who's listening,
email us.
Google it. Third Amendment, or maybe a big comedy fan who just happens to like that person knows who does that joke about the Third Amendment and actually knows what the Third Amendment is. It's my right to use other amendments to get out of what you're telling me I'm doing. That's my First Amendment right, is the Third Amendment. Like, well, you have to tell me what it is. That's my Fifth Amendment. I take the Fifth. And if you don't quit being so sick, I'm going to invoke the 25th Amendment on you. Did you see that stupid thing they've been posting on the internet about what you're supposed to say to a state cop when he comes up? Like, he'll come up with his ticket book, he'll flip it open. He'll say, "Oh, hi, officer. I bet you're going to write me a ticket to the Oregon State Troopers ball." And he'll say, "State troopers don't have balls." Zinger! I'm sure a cop has seen that by now, so it ain't going to be too long before they're immune to that joke.
Yeah.
Oregon State Troopers don't have balls.
No.
All right, what do you say?
Yeah.
Should we wrap this thing up?
Yeah.
I forgot to mention on the last two episodes what I normally do, which is go check out TerryGuile.com, which has, I think, 5 or 6 shows I got coming up in the Eugene area. And there's even one that's not on there that just got added up in Salem at some place that I can't even remember the name of, but details coming soon. That'll be March 9th with my buddy John Mink up there. And, go to TerryGuile.com. Thanks to Sick Daddy and Dustin Gatchel for hooking me up with that website. And also go check out VFMF.org. You can get some guitars for your kids. We got a great donation on Saturday of a Epiphone Special. That's the brand, a Special 2. It's a Les Paul-shaped guitar with an awesome Monster painting on it of the Monster energy drink and some other stuff.
Yeah, it's all, glossed over.
Yeah, it's nice looking.
Yeah.
So go check that out. We had a successful evening and raised some money, and we're still working on all that. If you want to information on it, go to vfmf.org. And you can check out tagcastpodcast.com, which has links to all of our social media sites, and you could donate to us if you're feeling generous or if you like what you hear and you want us to keep doing it. Just give us a buck or something on our PayPal, and you can also shop through Amazon and give us a little revenue as well. And special thanks to our sponsors. I'm Still Full of Pizza Now. And Complete Ag Resolutions is going to fix my tractor next week because my tractor is sexy. And you guys better get out there and do something tonight. It's going to be on the plugs, but I want to remind you, if you love me and you think that I'm funny and you want to see my comedy career go forward, come out to the city, which is in Eugene at 2222. MLK Boulevard in Calhoun's. There's a big comedy.
Triple two.
Quadruple two.
Quadruple two.
And you can vote for me. It's free to get in. And maybe I'll be Oregon's last comedian standing on one leg.
Nice.
Who knows? I only get 2 minutes, so you got to vote for me. And I've never done a 2-minute set, so
you'll have to get snap the leg off the trophy if you win, right?
I'll just snap it off. I'll just walk up there and flip my leg around and say, "Now that I got that out of the way, I got 2 minutes to make you fuckers laugh." Why do you think homeless people don't get knock-knock jokes? Oh, wait, I fucked that one up. My Nirvana sticker turned into an NRA sticker. Wait, no. That could be my new persona. I'll just be busting out jokes in the wrong order.
Yeah.
I'll just say punchlines for another joke. And thanks for listening to my podcast, you guys. And come out on this. Hope you guys have a great weekend with your bad selves. And metal.
Oh, I'm kind of nervous. You know why homeless people don't get knock-knock jokes? Because Nirvana, NRA.
The TagCast podcast can be heard on iTunes,
Stitcher,
TuneIn Radio,
and our website,
TagCastPodcast.com.
You can also hear us rebroadcast on internet radio station Rock Out Radio on Friday evenings. Find us on Facebook and review us on iTunes.
Help support our show. Donate directly on our website.
Or click on our Amazon affiliate link before you shop there.
TechHasPodcast.com.
Pluggy plug 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 plug. Hey, all you Taggets. How are you guys doing out there? You got your concerts coming up, comedy shows, music. You guys want to get out and do something fun? Of course you do. You don't want to sit at home like a stick in the mud. Wednesday, February 27th, it's the Oak Street Speakeasy Comedy Showcase. It's Andy Bradwin's going away show. He's moving to Boston. So I'm sure it will be most of the usual suspects of the Eugene comedy scene, including myself, Mac Chase, Carmichael, probably Jason Eifler, Dylan Flynn, and of course your host, Seth Milstein. That starts at 9 o'clock. It's a 21 and over show, $5 suggested donation. If you're broke, it could be free for you. Friday, March 1st at the City in Eugene, it's the prelims for Oregon's Last Comedian Standing, Survival of the Funniest, 2013. 2222 MLK Boulevard in Eugene. It's a free show. It's 21 and over, 8 o'clock. Saturday, March 2nd at the Dixie Creek Saloon. It's the benefit for Brooklyn put on by the Willamette Valley local music scene. Got a slew of acts including Lyndon and Amber Wood, the Milestoners, Ed to Shred, Strange Dichotomy, Bikini, and the High Desert Hooligans. It all starts at like 5 o'clock for a couple hours of all-age action, if you come with your parents, and then after 7, it's 21 and over. It's a free show, a fundraiser for a great cause. Saturday, March 16th at the Wow Hall in Eugene, it's We Have Guns, Tall Boy, 30-Pound Test, and Audiophobia. Tickets are on sale at the Wow Hall and online. Check that out and go see that show. If you're not in the Eugene area and you're down or up here by Albany, go to Tangent at the Dixie Creek Saloon. We got Wicked Haven with Crimson Guardian and Bikini. It's a 9 p.m. show, 21 and over, also free. Saturday, March 23rd in Portland at the Hawthorne Theater, it's Nile with Ceremonial Castings and World of Lies. Featuring my buddy Tony Avila. You should hit him up on Facebook. He's on my friends list. He can get you a discount on some tickets for that one.
Sweet.
March 26th, it's Graves at Sea, Ashborn, Aldebaran, and Ephraim, I can't even say that name, so forget it. It's at the Ash Street Saloon. I can say that, though. It's $8. That's up in Portland. It's a Tuesday night for some doom. Wednesday, March 27th at the Cosmic Pizza in Eugene on 8th. It's Pajama People featuring Ike Willis doing two sets of Frank Zappa's great music. I will be setting in for a few tunes on bass guitar. Thanks to Glenn and those guys for giving me the chance to jam with Ike, a legend, a living legend. Thursday, March 28th at the Granary, it's Comedy as Advertised with your host, Seth Milstein. I will be on that show as well, and we will have the lineup of comedians coming soon as the information becomes available. It's a 9 p.m. show, also free. March 29th is a Friday at the Crystal Ballroom, Anthrax, Exodus, Municipal Waste, Holy Grail, and High on Fire. That's up in Portland. I'm lucky enough to have a VIP pass with my name on it, thanks to Dave Forsythe, my buddy down in Reno, Death Metal Dave. So we're going to be talking maybe with the dudes from Anthrax and Exodus that night. It should be good. The next night, March 30th, it's a Saturday night at the Roseland Theater, Clutch and Orange Goblin. Don't have any information except that's an awesome show and you should check it out and go to it if you have the chance. Sunday, March 31st at the Actors Cabaret of Eugene, it's the 18th annual Laugh Off. It seems expensive at $20 a head, but all proceeds go to the Green Hill Humane Society. This is like the 18th year in a row. They will name the funniest person in Eugene. I will be performing at that. It's 18 and over, 7 p.m.
What's the charity?
Green Hill Humane Society.
I'll give some cat hat, Santa hat parts.
I will bring them down there.
All right.
So, yeah, you guys get out and do something fun. There's so much to choose from. And then when you get home, you can listen to more of the TagCast podcast. At TagCastPodcast.com. Hope you guys have a wonderful evening.